The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial. Welcome to Financial Focus Radio Show. Today, you will hear the truth in wealth building from Troy Reinhart and Tyler Simonis of Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management. We hope you enjoy the next 2 hours of wealth building knowledge. If you have a question for the show, go to financialfocusradio.com. Now, from our studios in beautiful Bend, Oregon, to you all over the Northwest, here's Troy and Tyler.
The gang is back together again. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Financial Focus Radio. Thank you for joining us. My name is Tyler Simonis. I'm one of the partners at Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management here in Oregon. And I'm joined by my co-host, the one Mr. Arnold Troy Reinhart.
Good morning, everybody.
And our advisor that lives in Eugene, but is here this week, Robert Josh Finelli. I don't have a surname.
You got a middle name.
True. All right. So as always, we're going to talk about the capital markets and the week that was last week. There was a lot to talk about. That is the financial channels, actually all news channels, didn't know what to cover. There was so much to talk about last week. So we'll tackle some of that. We have some email questions we'll get to. We thankfully today have a guest, and I know he is a guest that is quite popular with our listeners, Don Klipnis from Health Insurance Strategies. All of you that, we're going to talk about all things health insurance, and I know a lot of people that are on Medicare or have Medicare questions. Don will answer a bunch of those. So let's talk about the week that was last week in the capital markets. U.S. stocks, as measured by the S&P 500, were up about 0.86% last week. That is the 10th straight week of gains for the U.S. stock market. It appears to be all rainbows and butterflies on Wall Street right now.
You know what that means.
Of course I know what it means.
It's going to end one day. Yeah. Get ready.
This too shall pass as the snowstorm finally hopefully passed.
Oh, from your lips to God's ears.
International stocks were up 0.75% last week. International developed stocks. Emerging market stocks were actually down 0.5% last week. We saw yields finally move in the bond market. Yields moved higher. The 10-year now is at 2.75. It's still historically low, but we did see a movement in the bond market where the yield's moving higher. Gold got kind of took it on the chin last week. Gold was down $40 last week. And oil,
worst week since November.
Oil was also lower last week. So lots of movement. In fact, actually, there was a lot of movement last week, but I'm surprised we didn't see more volatility. And when I read off I'm just going to read off, and then we can kind of go through. Read off the things that were potentially market moving if they alone had happened. So we saw Robert Lighthizer testify in congressional testimony. We saw about U.S.-China trade talks. Obviously, we saw a North Korea-U.S. nuclear weapons summit. We saw the chairman of the Federal Reserve.
Easy for you to say.
speak to Congress last week. We saw an entertaining testimony from Michael Cohen in front of the House Oversight Committee. We saw the end of fourth quarter earnings, and we got the GDP print for the fourth quarter that was better than expected. So all of those things individually could have been hugely market moving. What's interesting to me is that none of them by themselves moved the market all that much.
And the biggest one that surprised me was the fact when Lighthizer came out and talked about the progress of Chinese trade talks, followed by Larry Kudlow leading the parade and cheering it on and saying how good they're going. The market just yawned, and that really, really surprised me.
Well, it started on last Sunday when the president tweeted out that they were going to suspend the increase in tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese good that was supposed to take effect today, actually Saturday the 1st, and they were going to suspend that. And so markets really liked that news on Sunday. We saw the futures Sunday night move higher. Markets started trading higher on Monday, and then as we got more news that the trade talks were going well, as Troy said, I was surprised, really surprised, that we didn't see more of a movement from the market. The other thing that was I thought should have been more market moving was the Federal Reserve Chairman essentially saying they are on hold for the foreseeable future as it relates to raising interest rates. And they also talked about their plans for stopping the runoff of their balance sheet. So if you remember, the Federal Reserve bought trillions and trillions, $8 trillion worth of bonds during the financial crisis. They're essentially going to stop that roll-off this fall.
Well, and his testimony seemed to reveal that they've pretty much already formulated a plan and they're deciding when they're going to implement it. And that would be huge for markets because that withdraws a ton of liquidity from the system each month. And I think a lot of market participants have underestimated just how much that actually means.
But we do have to give credit where credit is due. I tuned into the House Finance Committee's testimony where Jerome Powell spoke, expecting a circus led by Maxine Waters, the chairman, and AOC. And it was a well-behaved, well-deserved, decorumed thing. And I got to give Maxine Waters credit.
Oh, that's hard for you to say, I know.
But you got to give credit.
But for now, let's say for now, that's what's happening. But yeah, so this is going to be interesting, though, that, you know, Troy and I did an e-news last week. And, you know, I essentially said in the e-news that the stage is set for risk assets to do well with interest rates being as low as they are. And that looks like it's going to be true for the foreseeable future. Low asset prices support much higher multiples for risk assets like stocks. And so I think that has a lot to do with why stocks are up for the 10th week in a row. Market participants are anticipating low interest rates to remain low. So we got fourth quarter GDP print that was actually quite a bit better than expected. In the fourth quarter, the U.S. economy grew at 2.6%. Economists polled, depending on who you ask, were looking at somewhere between 2 and 2.2%. So the fourth quarter GDP print was better than expected. And as Troy mentioned, slower growth does not mean no growth.
The other thing is the market didn't react on Friday to the lower consumption number and the lower personal income numbers. They were way disappointing, and I thought it would too. So it was conundrum all week long.
Well, and you know, the data has certainly been mixed, but I think that is creating this self-fulfilling prophecy with the Federal Reserve, is that the Fed looks at the data, says, okay, we have mixed data. The job market's still really good, but we're not seeing tremendous wage growth. We're not seeing much inflation, if any. You know, like with the weak data, they say, okay, we'll keep rates low, and that's good for stocks. And
it's like a 2017 redux, because the bad news is good news insofar as rates are going to continue to stay low, and that's sort of the fuel for the fire.
And I think that's ultimately the put underneath the market. The driver of stocks going higher is ultimately that. So as Troy mentioned, though, when I talked about the 10th week up in a row for the market, this is the best start to a year in almost 30 years.
Real estate's just off all-time highs too, which...
My point in bringing that up is prepare yourself mentally for a correction. One, markets can't go up. It's not healthy for them to go straight up in a line. And so mentally prepare yourself for some 5, 10% correction. And we say that so you're ready when it happens and aren't surprised when it happens and don't do anything stupid.
Right. It could be next week. It could be another 10 weeks from now, but it will happen.
But we're going to get to that inflection point where good news is bad news all of a sudden. And that, I think, is probably coming down the pike soon.
So last Saturday, Warren Buffett's annual letter. Did you guys read it?
Buffett's, yes, I
did. Did you read it? No. So his annual letter to shareholders came out last week. And of course, it was full of great stuff in there the crux of the letter, what most people should be reading is sort of the first 14 or 15 pages. That's when he's sort of just writing about what he sees in his businesses and what he sees in the U.S. economy. But if you don't read anything else, you go on the Berkshire Hathaway website and click on the letter to shareholders. Just read on page 13 and 14. There's a little subtitle called The American Tailwind, and it talks about on March 11th, 1942, Warren Buffett bought his first stock, and he talks about all the things that have happened. And you should read this every time you get worried about the future of this country or the future of stocks. And you should also have your children, if they're old enough to be able to read it and understand it, read it, because essentially it's, you know, don't bet against America. That America, our system, while it's not perfect, it is the best ever invented. And that's going to be true out in the future. It doesn't matter. You know, since 1942, we've had seven Democrats and seven Republicans as president. And nothing like this country has ever existed, and that's going to be true out into the future. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about the market news that happened last week and what it means for your money. So stick around.
Connect to the Financial Focus radio show on our social networks, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Listen to past shows, get our daily market blog, and keep up to date on market happenings. Let's get back to the show.
If you'd like to be part of the show, you can call us at 877-670-7117, or you can go to our website, financialfocusradio.com, click on the Contact Us, and send us an email. We do have lots of emails, and we love getting those. If you'd like to take us up on one of our free retirement interviews anywhere you can hear my voice, you can spend an hour with me, Troy, or Josh talking about all things financial. Call our office. That number is 800-743-0988, and we will give you an hour of our time for free.
We still had a few hardy souls brave the snow to come see us this week, and they're better people than I.
Yeah, we did.
Doing it, so.
I went to see our accountant, and it was awful quiet in his office. I think he was actually kind of happy that we had all the snow. People had to take a break on tax season.
I bet he was, because it's a busy time of year for those tax people.
So we're going to talk about what happened last week in the markets and how that relates to your money. But I have one quiz question, and then I also want to talk about this refund situation that everybody is freaking out about. So this is a question for you guys. What country in the world has the closest 10-year government bond yield to the United States?
China.
You're never going to. I mean, I was
Brazil.
With Italy, which is hilarious because Italy is, you know, if you look at they have the fourth biggest bond market.
Getting 7%.
Yeah, they have the fourth biggest bond market in the world, yet their finances are like most southern European countries, disaster. So I wanted to talk about, you know, there in the news so far the last 3 weeks as tax season has started, there have been a lot of hemming and hawing and people being very upset about their refunds being reduced to what they were previously. And people are thinking that because the refund is down that they're paying more in taxes. So I just want to put some data to this and explain what is really going on so that at least our listeners or people that are listening to us right now have some understanding. And I think most of you are probably smart enough that you already know this, but I want to bring it up. So first, Richard Thaler, who's a Nobel-winning economist at the University of Chicago, he can't figure out, just like the three of us can't figure out, why people want to get refunds, right? Like, let's talk about what a refund is. It's a interest-free loan to the United States government who has not proven themselves very good at allocating money.
Right. It's not that you're getting money back. You paid
it's your
too
money.
Much.
And so most Americans right now received a tax cut in 2018 on their 2018 income. But they're seeing smaller tax refunds once they finish their return. And so let's talk about what's happening. So in 2017, you know, this new law came out and the average American saw a reduction in their tax obligation of $1,600, according to the U.S. Tax Policy Center. So people on average last year paid about $1,600 less in taxes. But when the tax law changed, they didn't change their withholdings on their paycheck, and so they weren't withholding the correct amount, and so they're not getting as much back. So what I can't figure out is, like, okay, they get this tax cut, all of a sudden they didn't change anything, but their take home pay went up, and they didn't think, something's different here. They just took it for granted.
Free money,
yeah.
And that's the example of how people don't look at their finances and don't do financial planning. And you have to have a plan and a thought process. And it isn't just something you visit once a year when you do your taxes.
So just to be clear, the average American got a $1,600 reduction in their taxes. But most people are getting less back in the form of their own money in the form of a refund. It's because their withholdings weren't done correctly.
Well, up until this week, the Treasury Department statistic just came out and said that the average refund is actually up $40 over last year.
Now, yeah, that's new data. But in the beginning of the tax return season, they were down.
All
my point
early
is
flyers skewed it. They're always looking for their tax return because they need the money.
And I think what's going to happen is, as we move forward, it'll keep coming up. People are going to be upset. People shouldn't be upset because they are actually paying less in taxes.
Well, and they kept the – even in spite of the shutdown, refunds were going to continue to be paid out. So it was sort of this tacit acknowledgement that people are reliant on that windfall.
Yeah, which it's their own money. People, it's your own money.
But as much as people don't want to hear that, that is the facts and that is the case. And you're getting less, you're paying less in taxes and you're just getting it through your monthly paycheck.
I would say that the Republican Party needs to do a better job of explaining that people actually are paying less in taxes, and regardless of what their refund is. That's the message that people need to hear.
Right.
So let's talk about the lessons that can be learned from what has happened in the stock market, specifically here in the United States, from last August up until Friday, especially as it relates to all of the talking heads on the financial media, present company, the three of us not included. And so, you know, markets hit a peak in the U.S. in August of last year, U.S. large cap stocks, so the S&P essentially and the Dow. And then we all know what happened in the fourth quarter. We saw a sharp sell-off. Certain markets reached bear market territory as measured by a 20% peak-to-trough decline. And on December 24th, we saw a big whoosh of selling. We saw markets go down a ton. And since that date, markets are up almost 19% since December 24th, as measured by the S&P 500. And so that has been frightening for a lot of people. We know a lot of retail investors, maybe some of you, went to cash sometime in the fourth quarter and with the intention of getting back in the market. You still haven't gotten back in the market and you're waiting for markets to go down again. But what I want to focus on is why you did it and the financial media that helped you make a bad decision. And so I was watching CNBC last week and there were people on that were talking about how, you know, it was clear flying and it was rainbows and butterflies and that stocks were going to go up another 25% in the short term and that we weren't going to have a recession anytime soon. But there were literally the same people that at the end of December were talking about how a recession was imminent right around the corner, maybe as soon as the first quarter. Stocks were going to go down another 25%. And they, at the time, made a pretty sound, cogent argument, you know, for some people to do something about it. And if you did something about it, you missed a huge move up. And so instead, our goal of the show is to help you make good long-term decisions and weed out that noise, which makes you think that investing is this binary in and out decision based on what markets are doing.
Talking heads play to your emotions on the greed on the upside and fear on the downside. And so, yeah, the biggest enemy to your wealth building efforts, people out there and our good listeners, is your emotions. And they will drive you to do the wrong thing all the time, every time, and not watching those talking heads treating the markets and the financial world like it's one big basketball game is something you can avoid.
And these are smart, well-spoken people that, you know, that get paid to talk about what they, I guess, perceive to be happening in the markets, but they are very detrimental and they feed on your emotions. And as Troy said, they talk about the market like is a sporting event, which it's definitely not. It's a proxy. Stocks are a proxy for earnings. So mentally prepare yourself for another correction, because as we look out in the world, there's plenty of things that can cause volatility to the downside, but that is temporary. As we just found out, if we look at the market from August till today, volatility to the downside is always temporary.
Can you think in recent memory of any kind of sentiment recession that you've seen to this extent and just the such abrupt reversal that we've seen lately?
I can't think of any in my lifetime where it's been so crazy from how people think about it.
Yeah.
All right. If you want to be part of the show, give us a call, 877-670-7117, or go to our website, financialfocusradio.com. When we come back, we are going to tackle some of your email questions, so stick around.
You're listening to Financial Focus Radio Show, where you get straightforward financial advice every week from the partners at Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management. Troy Reinhardt and Tyler Simonis tackle the many issues that we face in our wealth-building strategies. Remember, you can always listen to past shows by going to financialfocusradio.com or download our smartphone app today.
Welcome back to Financial Focus Radio. Thank you for joining us. If you'd like to sign up for our e-newsletter list, you can go to our website, financialfocusradio.com, and send us an email and say, sign me up for your e-newsletter. And that's all we will send you. Troy and I did one of those last week. We send them out every 2 weeks. It's just a short 5 or 6 minute video. I guess last week was maybe more like 7 minutes, but
you're not quite. You kept it below seven.
We did, okay. But we send those out every 2 weeks, what's going on in the market. And the bonus, maybe not for everybody, is that you get to see us instead of just hear us.
Which is, I think it's a bonus.
Yeah. So a lot of people don't realize how much timing when you retire has an influence on your withdrawals, and as evidenced by Troy and I remember this during the financial crisis, people that retired wanted to feel like the financial crisis didn't affect them or shouldn't have affected them, right? That we were in a recession. It was affecting everybody else, but I'm retired. It shouldn't affect me.
Yeah, the laws of economics are somehow suspended because you're retired is not true.
And so a company called BTN Research did a study, and they titled this this study Lucky. And I'll just read you anecdotally what happened. A person with $1 million invested 100% in the S&P 500 index as of 1-1 of 1973, so we remember what happened then, beginning of a recession, withdrawing an inflation-adjusted $100,000 per year would be out of money in 9 years. So they would have been out of money by December 31st of 1981. A person with $1 million invested in the S&P 500 index as of 1-1 of 1982, which we also remember what happened then. That was the beginning of the greatest bull market ever in this country, and withdraw an inflation-adjusted $100,000 per year would have $4.6 million after 37 years, or 12/31 of last year. So obviously when you start retirement and your withdrawal has a huge impact on its success, we would tell you that $100,000 is way too high of a withdrawal rate. That's 10%. But if you look in 1982, and you wouldn't have known this in 1982 that you could have done it, right? Nobody knew. In 1982, especially if you lived in Bend, Oregon, it was pretty bleak.
Oh, you thought the world was coming to an end and so never going to get better.
And you wouldn't have withdrawn $100,000 a year. But obviously that shows you that in one period, if you started at the beginning of a recession, you would have only had money for 9 years. In the other situation, you would have your 100 grand adjusted for inflation would have lasted 37 years, and you'd still have $4.6 million.
Well, that's my two daughters have UGMA accounts, custodial accounts that grandma has put birthday money and everything in. Allison, my oldest, was born on December 17th, 1999, and started her account. My daughter Bianca was born in May of 2002. And one was at the very top of the market and one was at the bottom. And it's amazing. They put in the same amount of money and the difference in the account values.
Huge difference.
Allison feels put out.
Well, she's going to college.
You got to remedy that.
Yeah.
I got to pay reparations.
Yeah. Isn't she all about equivalence? And?
Oh, yeah. Oh, she's on the AOC program. All right. We got an email from a Tony Chan in Portland. And Tony says, I'm 69 years old and I make $100,000 a year. I have $1.3 million in cash and investments. I have a 30-year fixed mortgage on my house that I owe $95,000 on. The house is worth $195,000 or so. I'm still working but want to retire. Should I pay off my house with the money that I have or keep the money in my investment accounts?
Don't pay off. My opinion is you don't pay off your house because you're going to have to take it out of a source that'll more than likely raise your taxes. And number two, once you get it into the house, it's hard to get it back out, especially when you're retired, if you need it for medical or something like that. So just keep paying your rent until it's paid off and would be my advice.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably, Tony, hopefully your mortgage rate on that loan is low. And so it's relatively cheap money. You're not getting the same tax benefit with a new tax law that you had previously gotten. But
if it's very high, go refinance.
Yeah, I mean, if it's high, you can go out and refinance it. But, you know, I agree with Troy that once we tell this to all people, you know, once the money is in the house, it's very hard to monetize that. And you always need some place to live. And so, you know, I think, Tony, it sounds like you can probably retire. I think this is one of those situations we'd need a little more information if you have some after-tax money where the tax liability to get out of that would be less. There's also something to be said for peace of mind. Now, some people like to retire and have no, we call them alligators to feed every month, meaning payments. If you're one of those people that it would just make you feel better to not have a mortgage, you have after-tax money where the tax liability isn't too great, then probably paying off the house isn't the end of the world.
But you don't want to be like some people that think, I'm going to pay off the house, I'm not going to have a payment. With insurance and taxes, you still got a pretty good house payment, and don't forget that, put that in your budget.
Yeah, I mean, the property taxes is always funny to me when people, you know, like, oh, my house is paid off. And, you know, property taxes is, I mean, for me, it's $1,000 a month are my property taxes if I think about it on a monthly basis.
Yeah, it's real money. And then tax or insurance on top of that is amazing.
All right. If you want to ask us a question, you can go to financialfocusradio.com, click on the contact us, or call us 877-670-7117. Jake S. and Eugene sent us an email and said, what risk am I taking by having all of my investments through one investment firm? Does the term all my eggs in one basket apply here?
Is he talking one investment firm, like one financial advisor?
I think
advisor?
He means like if all of his money was with us, for example. All of his investments were with us. It's not clear. So let's make the assumption that he's saying all of his money is with Schwab or Merrill Lynch or LPL, or, you know, it's all at one custodian.
Right. Provided he's with a fiduciary, I don't see any risk at all in that. And I think it actually is beneficial in that that fiduciary, your registered investment advisor, is capable of assessing your entire financial situation rather, and particularly in the instance that we have talked about on the show before, where you tell your advisor that there's money at another firm and you're incentivizing them somehow to beat the other firm, but on a performance basis, that can create real dilemmas.
You're right. And I think having all your stuff with one financial advisor helps them to help you really add value. And Josh is right. You need to make sure you have a fiduciary. You need to understand how they get paid. You need to make sure that your interests are aligned. But there's nothing wrong with it, but you got to drive down to your portfolio and be well diversified.
It's impossible to render accurate advice if you're not telling the advisor the full extent of your financial situation.
Right. Well, and Jake, I think Jake's concern here has more to do with, you know, Jake, if your firm fails, let's say you have money custodied at Schwab, for example, and you own shares in a mutual fund, and Schwab were to fail, you still own those shares in those mutual funds. So, you know, there's diversification across investments. You don't need to diversify across custodians, if that makes sense. So where those investments are held, your eggs in one basket would apply to owning one investment. But having an investment advisory firm manage your money and then diversify it within the custodian where your money's at, that's where you're mitigating your risk and taking that eggs in one basket off the table. But as these guys said, having one fiduciary financial advisor that can make good recommendations because he or she knows everything about your financial life is much more advantageous. Generally, the more money you have with the firm, the better deals you're going to get from a fee perspective. Obviously, we believe that our clients should have all their money with us just so we can help best advise them. But the investments that they own through our custodian have nothing to do with our success or our custodian's success. They still own those whether we fail or our custodian fails or not.
And many people really don't understand what a custodian is, and that would probably be a good thing to cover on the show and talk about, is because making sure you have a solid custodian is important, but as Tyler said, you don't need multiple custodians.
No, that's just sort of costing yourself money and headache for your beneficiaries if something were to happen to you. They'd have to sort of figure out where all that money is. All right, if you'd like to take us up on one of our free retirement reviews, you can call our office 800-743-0988, and we will give you an hour of our time. Stick around when we come back. I guess I'll tell you what we're going to do when we come back.
Thank you for joining Financial Focus Radio Show, The Truth in Wealth Building. Call the show anytime at 877-670-7117. We'll try to answer your question on the air in the following weeks. You can also email the show at troy@northwestquadrantwealth.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back to Financial Focus Radio. Thank you for joining us. Hopefully you've survived this ridiculous amount of snow that we've gotten here in most of the state. Josh, did they get snow on the coast, did your parents say?
It did not. It tried to snow, but it didn't stick.
How about Eugene?
But I think Bandon got, parents want to say, 18 inches of rain in February.
How about Eugene? How much snow did you guys get in Eugene?
We got 15 inches cumulatively.
Wow. Man, that's going to be messy.
I thought the Beavers opening salvo on Friday was going to get snowed out, not rained out.
I was going to try to. I don't know what that team from West Virginia is probably wondering when they made their schedule what they were thinking when they're going to be in Corvallis in early March.
Cold and even if it's not raining, it's cold and misty and everything's wet. It's just you're not going to want to hit the ball because you hit it wrong
or catch it. I was going to go on tomorrow to see the last one of the series, but I don't want to drive over that pass and sit in freezing.
I'd call you crazy if you did.
It's hairy up there right now.
So this falls under the start right away. A child born in February of 1997, so 22 years ago, who started college in the fall of 2015, is scheduled to graduate from a four-year public in-state college in May of this year. Yeah, that's the plan at least. If the child's parents had invested $139 per month beginning at the child's birth, in 1997, and had an annualized earn rate of 8% on all invested dollars, the parents would have been able to pay for the four-year college expense of tuition fees, room and board for a four-year in-state college of $81,880. So the point of that is not to guilt you into doing it, but the earlier you can start saving for whatever it is, college, this is an example, but for retirement, whatever you're trying to save money for, if you can let the power of compounding work in your favor and save money for whatever the dollar amount is. In this case, $139 a month came out to $82,000. So whatever the amount is, just start doing it. And the earlier you can start, the better off you're going to be. As Troy has said a bunch of times, you know, he started saving with our business before, you know, when he was 18 years old on a monthly basis. And it didn't matter if it was $10 or $100 or whatever it was. It's that it gets started and that it systematically happens every month. And the power of compounding can do wonderful things.
It did. My dad asked me one time if when he made me save $100 a month made me mad. And I said, it didn't make me mad then, but it makes me mad now. And he goes, why are you mad now? And I go, why didn't you make me save $200 a month?
Amen to that. All right, let's talk about our shame of the week. And it feels like we're picking on this group often, but they give us plenty to pick on.
They give us so many opportunities, and their alliances and are so ill-kept.
So we all know that during the financial crisis, in order for a lot of these big brokerage firms to survive, they were bought by big banks. So we know that Morgan Stanley and Smith Barney merged. We know that J.P. Morgan bought Bear Stearns. We know that Bank of America bought Merrill Lynch. Wells Fargo bought Wachovia. And so all of there was a tremendous amount of consolidation during the financial crisis so that these firms could survive. But they were bought by banks. And the idea from a banker standpoint is that you now have, like in Bank of America's case, if you're Ken Lewis, you look at Merrill Lynch and you say, there is a sales force now that I can acquire with 15,000 salespeople that are very good and been proven to, in, when they bought Merrill Lynch, proven very good to sell stuff. And they manage a tremendous amount of money for the clients that they serve. And so what the banks have done, and we've talked about this over the years, is they've tried to get as many hooks in the brokerage firm clients as they can so that they never want to leave, but so that they can cross-sell them so many products. And
hence
so
Wells Fargo's cross-selling problems.
And so an example of that, and I'm not going to pick on any specific firm because they're all doing it, is as we've seen – profit centers diminish at banks. They're forever looking for new places. So I'm sure the person that came up with this idea was handsomely rewarded. But most brokerage accounts have a sweep account attached to it. So if you think about your IRA or your taxable investment account, any investment account that is essentially a brokerage account has a sweep account. So if dividends aren't being reinvested, they go to the sweep account. When you sell something, it goes to the sweep account. Essentially, it's a money market account that pays interest, but it's a catch-all for everything that happens in the account. So if you sell a share of stock and buy another one, it has to first go into the money market account, settle there, and then go towards buying that new stock. So it's the catch-all for an investment account. And some people, our clients included, have high balances, $100,000, $200,000 in their money market account. And so what these banks have done is instead of having it be in a money market account at the firm, they have moved it into essentially a bank account so that the bank can now use that as part of their deposit base, which then allows them to go out and loan more money. So the reason it's the shame of the week, other than it, you know, it's not on the up and up, is the difference in yield between a money market right now and essentially a bank account is about 140 basis points, 1.4%. And so on $50,000 balance, that difference over 1 year would be $875 on a $10,000 balance in a money market account. It'd be $175. Some people have $100,000, $200,000 in these what should be in money markets and they're in bank accounts. And so the shame is that these banks, big firms, have found another way to profit from their clients at the expense of their clients. So while it is not illegal, it is certainly not the correct thing to do. They should have that money in the money market where the client could be earning 1.4% more on their money in the money market than they otherwise would be. I understand that the banks say, wow, look at this giant base so that we could call deposits so that then now we can go out and lend that money. It's just not right. And it's time and this is another example. And the reason we call it shame of the week is that there are good people at these firms, these big firms. We know some of these people. They're good people, good human beings. We believe them for the most part, to be honest. It's just that the firms that they work for are not honest. And it's been proved. I mean, it's not us, our opinion. It's news. I mean, it's factual news, and they're getting punished for it.
Well, and they're not acting as fiduciaries when they do that. And so you got to bring them out. If this is happening to you at one of these big bank firms, you need to call them on it and say, I don't want to be that way, and you're not acting like a fiduciary.
And Troy's right. The reason that they're not getting called on it is because most clients don't know the difference, first of all, between a money market and essentially a cash sweep account. And then they don't think of it as a big deal because they're not getting called out on it. But you know, $900. I think if you saw $900 on the sidewalk, you'd stop and pick it up. I mean,
I'd wrestle you for it.
But that, I mean, essentially that's what these banks are, I mean, these big firms are doing. So it's just another example of sort of an immoral business practice that shouldn't be going on. And Troy's right. They are not acting in a fiduciary capacity by making sure their clients are getting the best return they can get in their cash account, in their sweep account, in their brokerage accounts. And so that's why it is our shame of the week. And now we're going to go out on the sidewalk and wrestle for $900.
And when it comes to money, I fight dirty. So,
all right. When we come back, we are going to do Financial Focus University, and we're going to do Bonds 101. We're going to talk about all thing bonds. So stick around.
The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial. The mission is clear. Give transparent wealth-building advice for 2 hours every week. Welcome to our second hour of Financial Focus Radio Show with your hosts, Troy Reinhart and Tyler Simonis. Let's get back to the show.
If you want to be part of the show, give us a call, 877-670-7117, or go to our website, financialfocusradio.com. com and send us an email. If you'd like to take us up on a free retirement review anywhere you can hear my voice, call our office, 800-743-0988, and one of the wonderful people that answers the phone will get you on our calendar and we'll give you an hour of our time and talk about anything you want to talk about as it relates to your finances. This is under the title Out of Business, and these stats surprised me. 5,524 brick-and-mortar retail stores closed nationwide last year, down from a record 8,139 closures in 2017. And so far in 2019, 2,187 retail stores have closed. That's according to CoreSite Research. So, and I'm not laughing. I'm just surprised. Those numbers are much higher than I would have thought. The Amazon effect is real.
When they say retail stores, if Sears closed 2,500 stores, it adds 2,500. It's not 8,000.
Yeah, Sears doesn't count for one. No. But I mean, that's real. I mean, that's like a lot of retail outlets going the way of the dodo bird for sure.
Well, and we heard this week the Gap spinning off and closing 200 stores. 230, I think it was.
Yeah.
Victoria's Secret's closing 53 stores. So there's a lot of right sizing going on in the retail market.
Yeah, like half that comes down to what, Toys R Us, Sears.
But if you
Kmart.
Think well, but if you think about the difference between if you have a brick and mortar store. Or you with rent, right? All the things, rent and staff versus – so if I go buy a baseball bat for my son at Dick's versus I buy it online, their rent online is zero. They don't – you know, they have minimal staffing.
Yeah.
And so it's just – you know, and it's not – we're only talking about this. We don't – you know, we're not the ones that caused it or any of that kind of thing before we get angry emails.
There's certain retailers that have really figured it out. I mean, look at Best Buy's results earlier this week with
right.
that whole experiential aspect in the curation that you see from like a Nordstrom that they've been kind of hammered lately. But
well, and the interaction between the two being retail and brick and mortar, I know I went into Best Buy during Christmas time and they didn't have something on the shelf. And the guy right there on his iPad ordered for me. I paid it and bought it online and it was shipped to my house and they still got the sale. And Best Buy is a good example of everybody was waiting for them to die. They were going to go away, and they transformed themselves. And so there's still a combination of brick and mortar that work. You just have to do it right with internet sales.
And embrace technology, that's for sure.
Right.
All right, quiz question. Your employer offers a traditional 401k and a Roth 401k. Can you contribute to both?
Yes.
That, Troy, is correct. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. You can contribute to a traditional or a Roth, or you can split your contributions between the two types as long as your total contribution doesn't exceed the maximum for the year. And if you contribute to your Roth, you are not going to get the company match on that amount.
Some companies do give the match, but they have to put it into the regular IRA side.
Right. So the Roth isn't going to get the match.
Right. Oh, I see what you mean. You're still going to get the match.
Just going to go on the traditional
side. Right.
All right. Let's have a financial focus university.
Oh, those hollowed bodies.
Then I didn't have any ivy where I went. So let's talk about bonds 101. And I thought we'd talk about bonds is because really bonds are probably the least understood investment vehicle in the world. And I say that including financial advisors. When you talk to financial advisors or when I talk to financial advisors, I'm always surprised at their lack of sort of understanding of what bonds are and how they work. But one of the things I thought was interesting is bonds have been around way longer than I would have thought. The ancient Mesopotamia city of Ur, what is today Iraq, had bonds and a bond market in 2400 BC. So bonds have been around a long, long time. And
what did they do, write them on stone tablets?
Well, it was essentially an IOU, which is all a bond really is, right? But and since then, kings and different governments have used them in an effort to expand empires or build armies or whatever they're trying to do. And then later corporations obviously did that. So let's talk about what a bond simply is. It's a debt obligation, right? So there's stock, which is ownership in a business, a share in a business, and a bond is a debt obligation, meaning a company or a government or a municipality wants to raise money for something. So, for example, the city of Bend might want to borrow another $30 million to build some more parks. And they would issue some bonds in order to do that. It's IOU, and they have a specific period of time attached to them. So bonds, you know, the U.S. government will issue a 30-year treasury bond, and that means it matures 30 years from the date of issuance, and there is a coupon attached to that bond, which is the yield that the bond is going to pay, and then par on the bond is usually 100. And so that's how they come out. And then the municipality or whatever it is that's issuing it can issue covenants, can issue certain
they call them features.
Thank you.
Call features where they can call the bond away from you at a certain period of time if interest rates fall from where they issued so they can pay less. You can put it on them. There's lots of different call features that come along or different features that come along with bonds.
So the U.S. government is saying, okay, I want to borrow this amount of money or whatever the entity is. I want to borrow this amount of money. Let's say the city of Bend wants to borrow $30 million. They're going to hire a bunch of underwriters to underwrite their bond, and they're going to say, we're going to pay you 4% for the next 30 years, and then there's a bunch of people that will go out there and buy these bonds, and then the bonds start to trade on the secondary market just like anything else based on what's going on with interest rates. And so the bonds, if you look at the capital structure of a business in terms of order of seniority, bonds rank way high up there, way above stock, meaning if the company were to go to bankrupt, bonds get paid back way before stock is going to get anything. And so that's where I guess they're considered safer than shares in a business. So let's talk about the different kinds of major different categories of bonds. There's There's government bonds. So most governments issue some form of a bond, and some of them, like U.S. Treasuries, are going to have a very safe, they're going to pay back. And then you look at countries like Venezuela, who have defaulted, seems like every other year. And so there's government bonds. There's municipal bonds, like the city of Bend, the one that I just mentioned, that every municipality in the country can issue bonds. And those bonds are tax-free in the state at which they're issued and federally tax-free also. Those yields are generally going to be lower. There are corporate bonds. So corporations can go in the bond market and borrow money for whatever they want to do. And then there are asset-backed bonds like mortgage-backed or different kinds of assets that are backing these bonds. Those are the major type of bonds. There are importantly, there are different ratings on bonds. So different companies or governments have different abilities to pay. That's going to determine their interest rate that they have to pay on their bond. And then it also determines sort of, you know, the marketplace, what the market's going to feel about the bond.
But be careful of just buying bonds solely on their rating agency, because they're the same people that rated all that mortgage-backed securities that went bad during the financial crisis as AAA.
Yeah, so bonds, people think that bonds, all bonds are created equal. Bonds have a myriad of risks. Bonds have default risk. They have interest rate risk. And so there are some bonds out there that are what I would consider riskier than stocks. And so just because you own bonds doesn't mean that they're safe. And that's sort of the biggest fallacy in the investing world is that, oh, I have bonds in my portfolio. There are two different types of risks right now in the bond market, and they are very real. One's interest rate risk, meaning if interest rates go up, the price of the bonds go down. And the other one is credit risk, meaning when we have a recession, some of these bonds are going to default. So stick around. When we come back, we are excited to have our health insurance specialist, one Mr. Don Klipnis from Health Insurance Strategies. Stick around.
Connect to the Financial Focus radio show on our social networks, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Listen to past shows, get our daily market blog, and keep up to date on market happenings. Let's get back to the show.
Welcome back to Financial Focus Radio. Thank you for joining us on this first weekend in March. Doesn't feel like it. We were just talking during the break. Last year we were playing golf at this time, and I was was coaching my son's baseball team, and we had had two outside scrimmages. And I think his first outside practice this year is going to be his first game. So, all right, we are lucky enough to have our health insurance expert, a one Mr. Don Klipnis from Health Insurance Strategies, join us for the next two segments. Thank you for joining us this week.
Hey, we're looking forward to it. Glad to be back with you guys.
So you survived the all the snow? You survived the snow, obviously, by being here. But I'm talking about all the
open
dates.
Open enrollment and for Medicare, for individual. Yeah.
Life has kind of become like a CPA, right?
And correct.
They have these dates that you're up against, and you have 15 appointments a day.
We are pretty intense from 1st of October until the middle of December. And by then, it just pretty well drops off significantly. And so that's good in that way. But one of the things that has transpired is Medicare has opened up a new enrollment period for us for Medicare Advantage.
To fill your time?
Yeah.
They figured I was sort of slacking a little bit, and they wanted to keep us going. But
so what's the impetus for them doing that, and then what are the sort of the dates that are important?
Well, I think they feel a lot of times the compression in the fall for people that are on Medicare Advantage plans, and this is what's referred to as MAPD plans. It's not the people on the supplements. That's the birthday rule. But the MA and MAPDs, this is the open enrollment plan. It's going to give them a time to say, okay, there was Thanksgiving and there was Christmas all in there and everything else, and you didn't get a chance to review your plan. Or maybe you switched. Maybe you went from a carrier you'd been with and you tried a new carrier. All of a sudden you find out that's not quite as good as what you thought it was. So they said, okay, if you've made a choice and your choice is done by December 7th, so then now you try your plan, you don't like it. Now you have from January 1st until March 31st to look at your MA plan, your MAPD plan, and say, you know what, this really isn't working. Or maybe you didn't get in the fall to be able to see us and talk about that plan and say, well, what's the strengths and weaknesses? What do I get? What don't I get? Some you're going to get chiropractic coverage with, some you're not. And some you're going to get vision with, better benefit with vision, and some you're not. So maybe you didn't do a thorough analysis or sit down with somebody. Now's the time to do it. Or maybe you listened to somebody at Walmart and you jumped on a plan and you said, you know what, it's not what I want. They have until the end of this month to make that choice. And what they can do is they can choose another Medicare Advantage plan, or they can go back to original Medicare and a prescription drug plan if they choose to. There's some things that they can do. So if they're unhappy with their Medicare Advantage plan, now is the time. They have until the end of the month to make those choices to get things set up. And there are some things that are guaranteed issues, and then some that we're going to have to work through some underwriting and look at some other options.
We're talking with Don Klipnis from Health Insurance Strategies. He's our health insurance expert. Don, real quick, you mentioned the birthday rule. Can you explain for the people on Medicare what the birthday rule is?
The birthday rule applies to the Medicare supplements. And when you look at that, that's totally different. When you go on Medicare, you can sort of see it as Medicare Part A and Part B, hospital and medical at the top of the screen. And then once you get through those two, then you're going to choose basically one of two roads. You're going to go the Medicare Advantage route, which has co-pays and those types of things that we were talking about. Now is that time, the open enrollment, to make the choices or selections. The other one is a Medicare supplement. The Medicare supplement is a plan that is very comprehensive. It's an independent insurance company that comes in after Medicare says what's allowed, it would then pay. The Oregon birthday rule, and it's specific to Oregon, says that if you are on a supplement, you have 30 days from the date of your birth to take and make that move to
on either side.
Pardon me?
On either side of your birthday?
Yeah. No. No, it's 30 days from the date of your birthday.
Okay.
Normally, our clients will reach out to them ahead of the time, and we'll reach out to them and say, hey, you're coming up on your birthday. What would you like to do? The beauty of the birthday rule is you can have all sorts of health issues. And if you're on a plan and we can find you a comparable plan of either like value or slightly less for significantly less money, now is the time to change. A gal in the end of the last week, when she came in, we sat down and looked at it. She was on a Medicare supplement plan F, and we looked at a plan G, and she was going to save almost $700 just by making the switch to a plan G. And the only thing she was going to be out would be $185 deductible. So it was really a no-brainer to her when to look at it. But the birthday rule applies to the supplement. The open enrollment period applies to the Advantage. But now's the time to look at both of those.
And as we talk about this, all this sounds very complicated, and I can see lots of people at home, eyes glazing over, going, it's better off and just do nothing. But it's your job to help people through it and help them make sense of it, and it's really not that hard with a little guidance, is it?
No, it is not, Troy. And as we have said, the three of us have talked numerous times and said, you know what, no decision is not a good decision. To sit there and do nothing, you're going to get burned. And there's been people that have been sitting on these plans for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and they're paying anywhere from $30, $40, $50 a month more than they need to. And maybe their health is good. Maybe they're at a point in time in their life where they can do something. But no, for us to sit down with them in about half hour, 45 minutes to an hour, we can walk through and show them what their options are in a language that they understand. And we'll get out of insurance ease and talk about how this works for you if you have this condition or that condition.
And the important thing for everybody out there to know is that whether you do it yourself or you hire somebody like Don to do it, you're paying the same amount. So, correct. You know, in our case, Troy, my case, we are happy to have Don in his office do it for us because it quite frankly makes our lives a million times easier than us having to spend, I don't know, it would probably take us a month to figure it out.
Oh, and we wouldn't do the right thing at the end of the day. How do people get a hold of you, Don, and get your advice?
Okay, they can give us a call at 541-388-2000. And one of the trusted staff, we have three wonderful ladies that keep everything going there. We'll be glad to get you on the calendar to get things set up and squared around from that standpoint. The thing that I want people to understand is they're not hiring us when they come in to see us because there's absolutely no fee for them to come see us. We'll sit down and do an evaluation for them. And even if they choose to go with our services, there's no fee that's going to be paid because they're paying for a broker service, whether they use a broker or not. So it's important for them to understand our services are there, ready for them. We'll be glad to meet with them at any time.
You mentioned during the break, Regence has moved into the market
yes.
in a big way. Why don't we talk about what that means?
Yeah, Regence has come very aggressively into the Medicare supplement market in 2018 and in 2019, and we're looking forward to working with them. We've worked with them. They're a local company. We've is similar to Pacific Source being local on the Medicare Advantage side. Regence is actually a good competitive homegrown supplement company here in Oregon. They've got a call center in Medford. They've got a call center up in Idaho. It's very easy for us to get a hold of these people and work with them. Regence has got some interesting caveats on their Medicare supplement plan Gs where we can add some benefits to them. They got a dental plan, a vision plan, and a hearing aid plan that all can be added in there. They got gym membership. They're doing some stuff that looks like an Advantage but really is a supplement.
We're talking with Don Klipnis, the owner of Health Insurance Strategies here in Central Oregon. If you want to get a hold of Don's office, that number is 541-388-2000, and his website is HisNorthwest, HISNorthwest.com. Stick around. We'll have more of Don Klipnis when we come back.
Thanks for listening to Financial Focus Radio on our Northwest network of stations in Bend, Portland, Salem, Eugene, and John Day. Remember, you can always catch our shows on our website, financialfocusradio.com, or download our app from iTunes.
If you'd like to take us up on one of our free retirement reviews, give our office a call, 800-743-0988, and one of the people that answer the phone will get you on our schedule. Either me, Troy, or Josh, anywhere you can hear my voice, and we'll give you an hour of our time and talk about all things financial. Today we're talking with Don Klipnis. Don is the owner of Health Insurance Strategies, and we're talking about, last segment we talked about Medicare, but I thought we'd talk a little bit. In the last segment we talked about Regence and all the
right.
sort of interesting things they're doing here, and we didn't really give them due time, so why don't we
I would agree with you. To me, Regence has become a competitive player in the marketplace. When you look at Medicare supplement plans, and like we were talking at the break, there's all kinds of them. Plan F is going away in 2020 to all new sales. So most people are moving over to a Plan G. So when you start looking at a Plan G, every company's Plan G pays the same. So the benefit is exactly the same on the supplement side. So then what you're looking at is price and what added little benefits do they give. And what Regents is doing is they are coming in and they're saying, hey, if somebody wants to buy a dental plan or a vision plan, hearing aid protection, they can get that plan for $44, and it has a $750 dental benefit it has. It's a little more comprehensive than most of the dental plans on the Advantage plans. It's got a vision benefit built into it. It's got a hearing aid benefit built into it. Regents is really listening to the broker input as far as how to be competitive in it. And I guess I'm really a Northwest loyal guy. If we can get the product here and we can get a hold of the people in Medford or Lewiston, Idaho, the call centers, we know that we're going to get the right answers. It may not be the answer I want, but it's going to be the right answer. And so we can work it from there. The other thing is Regents is giving you the option of saying, even though it may not be your birthday or you didn't get moved on your birthday, you're not our client or whatever, for whatever reason you didn't get moved, Regents is saying, if you have a supplement in force, and we can verify that, they're expanding the birthday rule so that that person then can turn around and be eligible to get a guaranteed issue with the Regents plan. And Regents Plan G in 2019 came down about $15 or $20. So it's one of the most competitive out there.
What's the story on the Cadillac plans? Why are they going away?
Well, the Cadillac Plan F is going away. Plan F, there is absolutely no expense to you if you're in the hospital on Medicare-approved plan. There's no expense to you if you go to the doctor on a Medicare-approved procedures. So the federal government is saying, in their wisdom, it's too rich of a benefit. So they want me to have some skin in the game. And I can understand that in theory, because if I wake up and I'm feeling lethargic and lackadaisical and no energy and don't want to go out and shovel snow, that sort of thing, you run into the doctor and the doctor's going to start running some tests, rightfully, wrongfully so. You can debate that at another time, but that's what's going to go on. So they're saying if we can slow that cost down. So a Plan G, a person has to pay the first $185 in the year for medical visits, okay? Nothing on the hospital. Hospital, they're still covered at 100% for. But if they go to the doctor, they go to the doctor, everything gets run through the system. Medicare says this is allowed. And they say, oh, you're on a Plan G. You owe that $100. So Don has then paid $100 of his $185. Once I pay my $185, it pays exact same as a Plan F. So we're seeing by far the largest percentage of people switch over to those plans.
We're talking with Don Klipnis. Don's the owner of Health Insurance Strategies here in Bend. His website, if you want to get a hold of him, is hisnorthwest.com. His phone number is 541-388-2000. So Troy asked you in the break about group plans. What's going on in the group plan market?
Group plans, the rate has really stabilized and it's actually come down a little bit on most of the plans. And in Central Oregon, we're really dominated with Pacific Source, and they've done a good job with it, and they've got a great overall team there. And so we're pleased with that. What we're starting to see is some of the employers are saying, wait a minute. In 2008 and 2009, during the Great Recession, everybody either held on or cut benefits, increased costs to the employees. What we're starting to see some of the employers do now, especially in the marketplace with the competition for employees, is we're starting to see, what about if we put a short-term disability in or a long-term disability policy, or maybe we put in a life AD&D type policy so that they could have something to offer their employees. Some employers are doing it where their employer paying it, and some employers are doing it where it's voluntary. The beauty of the employer sponsoring it, those are all guaranteed issues. And so the individual that may not be able to get insurance on the outside can get it now. It also helps on the short-term disability, long-term disability, and those types of things. Those are one of the benefits we're seeing come back. A lot of employers have also put in tax plans so that if their employees are having to pay for premium, that they then can do it with the legal document. And so there's just things like that, that if you don't know if you have one of those, give us a call. We'll walk through it and tell you if you've got one or not and tweak anything that we can to help you in all those areas.
So I wasn't sure I wanted to go down this rabbit hole, but you know a lot more about the health insurance business than Troy and I do. And so there's obviously lots of talk going on about Medicare for All in Washington, D.C.
It's a great idea.
And so, well, let's get your take on sort of what's being said and sort of the maybe what is crazy and some of it that might be have some merit.
Well, let me just preface by saying I think there needs to be a real debate that goes on to say – how do we fix some of the costs that's going on in our healthcare system, whether it's pharmaceuticals, whether it's the crazy cost of the treatment? There needs to be a healthy, genuine debate. But what's going on, in my opinion, can be summed up as one guy had said, if Medicare is crashing by 2026 is what both the Democrats and the Republicans have predicted, then why is Medicare for All such a great idea? It's almost like we know that the plane is going to crash and we're rushing out being progressive in our thinking so we can get on the plane and crash with it. That is really not the way to go. If you turn around and start looking at a socialized medicine, what we're seeing is when I did some research this last week and started looking that the a hip surgery in Canada, you're about 8 weeks out for it. Hip surgery in the United States, you're 2 weeks out. Knee, you're 4 weeks in Canada, 2 weeks in the United States. MRI, you're 6 weeks in Canada, and you're, I believe, a week or 2 weeks in the United States. Those are basic, simple things. They're not talking about cancers, which then all of a sudden you start talking out. I was looking at some stuff where you're 21 weeks waiting for some cancer diagnosis out of a socialized medicine system.
But isn't there's also the time, but isn't there a difference in level of care also?
Oh, sure there is. And, you know, you realize—
To me, that's maybe more important.
Well, they both are equally important because the time, if you're talking about breast cancer or if you're talking about colon cancer or some of those, the big C's, you're talking about wanting to get your treatment in a condensed period of time to verify, is there something to be concerned about? The time you go to your primary care and they says, oh, yes, you may have colon cancer, so now you have to go to a GI doc. The GI doc runs a test and all of this. Once you get in, you still could be out in Canada 21 weeks before you are able to get in for an MRI. And so you're starting to put things out at a long base, and you're talking colon cancer, you could be gone in a period of time. So the time and the technique is amazing. And we don't have but some of the best providers in the world, obviously in the United States, but Bend has a boatload of them. And so it's important to look at the whole picture. I don't know that you want to go and just say, this is a great idea, let's go for it. Please do not do what we did in the last time. We passed the bill, we were excited, but nobody read the bill. And there's already talk that this bill is great, we'll figure out all the details later. It just has to be looked at on a healthy standpoint.
Don Klibnes for president. So remind people real quick, Medicare Advantage open enrollment period, they can do it by the end of March, right?
End of March, 3/31. Okay. Yeah, open enrollment, look at Medicare
Advantage. And
so Advantage.
Remember, people, it doesn't cost you anything extra to have Don and his staff help you. Don is the owner of Health Insurance Strategies here in Bend. His website is HisNorthwest, HISNorthwest.com. Phone number 541-388-2000.
Correct. And we've got one Donald for president. I'm not in it.
Thank you very much for joining us this week, Don.
You bet.
You are listening to Financial Focus Radio Show, where you get straightforward financial advice every week from the partners at Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management. Troy Reinhart and Tyler Simonis tackle the many issues that we face in our wealth-building strategies. Remember, you can always listen to past shows by going to financialfocusradio.com or download our smartphone app today.
Welcome back to Financial Focus Radio for one last segment. As I promised you, we would tackle some email questions. If you want to be part of the show, call us 877-670-7117 or go to our website, financialfocusradio.com. com and send us an email. I have another quiz question. Stocks are great investments when you are young, but are way too risky for retirees to own. True or false?
As an old man, I'll say false.
You guys, geniuses. Stocks do carry risk, but given today's longer life expectancies, of course, if you had all your money in bonds yielding 2% or so, that's not going to make for a very good retirement. I guess unless your name is Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, they could earn 2% and be fine. But the point of the question, the quiz question, is that my two co-hosts got correctly is that there's this idea that by a lot of people out there that when you get to retirement, 65 or whatever it is, you have to have – you can't own any more risk assets or assets that are going to grow. And that's not true because now people are living a third of their life or more in retirement. And your only protection against inflation in retirement are stocks that have the ability to raise prices, that their pricing power gives them the ability to offset inflation because earnings are going to grow over time. And in terms of asset classes from a real return, so after inflation standpoint, stocks still continue to dominate over a long period of time.
I've always submitted since we started this show that the biggest risk to most people as they enter retirement is being too conservatively invested. And then the second thing is it doesn't matter what your age is, you need to make sure that you know what your risk tolerance is for volatility. That's the most important part and things. And people have funny ideas about risk tolerance and don't get it dialed in right, or their financial advisor just imposes some predetermined risk tolerance on top of them because of their age.
And that, and Troy's 100% right. What he means by that is you might walk into a financial advisor's office and he or she looks at you and says, you are in this age group. You're 58 years old, husband and wife, and so you should have 70% in stocks, 30% in bonds, and your tolerance for volatility might be not very high at all, and so maybe you should be like 40% stocks. But that's what Troy means by them imposing their what they think you should be in on you. And the risk to that is you have too much risk in your portfolio. Your portfolio goes down and you capitulate somewhere near some market bottom and go to cash, and that ruins your long-term returns of your portfolio.
It's quite difficult to ascertain what people's risk tolerance is, particularly for in the instance of a new client, until you've actually seen a...
But imposing risk is a worse
thing
to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sin, but it's interesting to see how that risk tolerance evolves throughout a full market cycle. In December, I think, was really illustrated to me some risk tolerances that I maybe previously believed were one are now very different than.
And that's a good point. Like, it's not an exact science. There is no way to know for sure what somebody's tolerance for volatility is. When we say risk tolerance, we just mean your tolerance for volatility. There is no, you know, scientific questionnaire or whatever that can do it. Most of what it entails, especially if you have some investment experience, is your behavior and past market events, how you behaved. Now, I know you're thinking about that changes as you get closer to retiring, but that's really sort of one of the best barometers is people's behavior and past market shocks.
But that's where a very good financial advisor, like the three of us in the room, earn their money and add value to your account. In December, Christmas Eve, world's going to heck in a handbasket, Santa's been assassinated or something, and that's why markets are going down. It was our job to talk to people and talk them off the ledge. That's the way people were acting.
Yeah, I know.
But it was our job. It was our job to talk people off the ledge and talk to them about this time is not different. Corrections are normal. It's going to end. Don't change your risk tolerance because what's going on in the market. Change it because of your life circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, and that ultimately, like, I remember in that period, it wasn't hard for us to say, you know, stay the course. Nothing has changed in your financial life that dictates you changing. The only time I would say, and maybe Troy would agree with this, is where I questioned that was during the spring of 2009 in March specifically. So 10 years ago this week, actually, where I thought, man, maybe my advice that I know or I have believed to be true forever isn't correct this time, just because the market was going down relentlessly at the time.
Every day, Tyler had a chart that was laminated that he brought to the office that year that showed the stock market since 1896 and its gyrations. And I'd go in every day and I'd look at that chart and say, whenever it's went down, it's always went back up. But it's hard enough for us not even to question ourselves. But people's emotions, we're your emotional rudders in bad times and choppy seas.
Christmas Eve certainly felt like sheer exasperation and panic, sitting there and fielding those calls that day and it being, you know, a relatively quiet week for the most part, usually.
And kids, Santa Claus didn't get assassinated. All right, we got a question from a Sam, Benin, and Ben. And Sam says, is it a good idea to get a whole life policy for a newborn child with a relatively small death benefit instead of a 529 plan just to put money into the cash value as a savings investment in vehicle that it can borrow against when my child needs to go to college?
Not no, but heck no.
So the strategy here is, and I have been pitched this when I was in corporate America, when I was about to have kids, the idea is that you buy a whole life policy for your child or whoever, and that the money in there grows tax deferred, and because there's a sub account or a fixed account that it's growing in, and then you use the money in there, you borrow against the death benefit, or you borrow against the cash value on a tax free basis. To pay for college. And so guess what? When you put money in a 529 plan, it's going to grow, in my opinion, faster than in a whole life policy over the 18 years that you're saving for college. And guess what? The money comes out of the 529 plan tax-free also.
That's right. And so this is one of those things. Never you buy life insurance to insure some life event, loss of a spouse's income or whatever it may be. But you do not buy life insurance is an investment vehicle, and it's usually sold by people that all they have is an insurance license, and that's the way they can try to make a buck. And it doesn't make them a bad person, but it makes them a financial salesman, not a financial advisor.
Yeah, it's not full disclosure. I mean, generally somebody that can offer you a whole life policy. I mean, I guess technically we have the licenses to be able to help somebody with a 529 plan and a whole life policy. But somebody that's doing this generally only can sell a whole life policy, couldn't help you with a 529. And so guess what? That's what they're going to sell you. The other thing to know that's important, we all have life insurance in the room. In fact, we have tons of life insurance in the room. The women that are beneficiaries in this room would make lots of money. But all of ours is term. We're not big whole life fans. All right. Thank you very much again for joining us this week. Hopefully you are out there staying safe and warm in all the snow. Come back next week and we'll have more Financial Focus Radio.
You've been listening to Troy Reinhardt and Tyler Simonis from Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management on the radio show Financial Focus. Remember, you can email or call anytime. Just go to our website at financialfocusradio.com. See you next week on Financial Focus.
The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.